Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and wherever you get your audio.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So rain is a gun. Fast to finger, down, is a stars tonight.
Open the voice gate for September 30th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box to sponsor this podcast and you set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever. But we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. Joined alongside, as always, your other co-host, Case Lowe. And Case, you have returned from assignment, and I've come across something completely unrelated from wrestling that I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Always a terrifying proposition. I don't know where you're going with this. It's good to be back. I saw a lot of nice comments on the episode that you did by yourself last week. It always makes me happy to step away for a second and have you hold down the fort as well as you do. Mike, what do you have for me?
So I finally got my record collection out of storage and moved over to my new house.
Okay.
And I ended up inheriting, because of my parents, about 60 comedy records, like comedy records being like a big thing in the 60s and 70s. And every time I come across this collection, and I've had it in storage for a little bit now, but getting it back out there, I go through this, and then it kind of like the way the comedy world used to be, that you would just have like, all right, my parents have like seven Smother Brothers LPs. And I just completely forget like that as an aspect of my parents' life, that when I've ended up with like their record collection, which for me was like, all right, original pressings of like Steve Miller Band and Led Zeppelin, let's go with that. They came along with this. So I was wondering, when's the last time you've bought a comedy album?
Well, when I got into collecting records, which at this point was like 10 years ago, that was a big thing, was getting some of the old Pryors and getting the Louis specials on vinyl. That was definitely a thing that I was focused on at that point. But If I've been collecting records for 10 years, I haven't bought a comedy record in 8 years, probably. I can't think of the last one that there's the podcast Hollywood Handbook, and they released an episode exclusively on vinyl a few years ago, and I thought that was such a fun concept that I have the Hollywood Handbook vinyl. Other than that, man, I'd have to look. I don't know the last one that I got. Again, it was probably an older prior record that I just grabbed just to have.
Yeah, like I came across a Chris Gethard album in this collection that I had to go like, oh yeah, no, there was a time I was a real big Gethard. So there we go with that. But it feels like that, at least with comedy, the whole Netflix/Comedy Central special has completely superseded the idea of a comedy album, because I just cannot think of them anymore. Like, that's just something that seems from like a generation's past that's like, oh yeah, no, Flip Wilson put out like a record every 3 months back in the 60s, and that's just something that doesn't happen anymore.
I feel like it was a thing in the 2010s. I mean, I remember back to like my first girlfriend, who was as into comedy as I was then, and we liked the same comedians. She had a bunch of them. You know, she had some of the Louis specials. She had some of the Marin specials. She did not have Chris Gethard. She was not a Chris Gethard fan, but she had a lot of that stuff. But I think the result of that now is that there's just the amount of quality comedy specials has decreased so greatly in the last 10 years, which is a big crusade that Mark Maron is on right now on his endless press junket that I very much support of him trashing the Austin comedy scene. That,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
he's basically going like, have you heard of Elephant Graveyard?
Yeah.
And then he just goes off to the races for 30 minutes. It's quite fascinating.
I mean, I talked to this guy at my shoot job once, and he seemed like a nice enough guy, but I'm personally not a fan of his comedic stylings. You know, what are you going to do? Press a Dusty Slay album on vinyl? I mean, maybe that's out there and I just don't know, but I think outside of Bargatze and Marin, and that might be it, at least the people that are on my radar, you know, there's very few people right now that are filling an hour with quality content. Now, I might like, you know, say the Stavroses of the world, but that's a crowd work thing. That's different.
I think his Lodge Room was actually like one of the last like stand-up specials that I actually really liked.
Yeah, that was really enjoyable. But it's just, yeah. You know, I mean, I feel a million years old when I talk about stand-up now, and I try to explain to people that maybe are my age but weren't as into, you know, maybe they were like, I don't know, had friends when they were in high school, and so they weren't as into the world of stand-up as I was and weren't refreshing splitsider.com every day. But just the cultural change in stand-up over the last decade is so dramatic and so severe, and not only in terms of the political affiliation of some of your biggest stand-ups in the world, but just I think the artistic nature that's been lost from it. And I don't see a lot of people fighting to get it back, which is really concerning. And the people that I do are, again, you know, your Mark Maron types, a little bit older. Now, that's not to say that's not out there. I think my position on this is very similar to a 45-year-old that might say, oh, there's no good rock bands anymore. That's because they're not actively looking for good new rock bands. I could give you a list of 40 bands that I love right now that started making music less than 10 years ago, in the same way that I'm sure there are a bunch of comedians out there working on an hour, trying to do good work, trying to do stand-up in how I would deem it to be the right way. But I'm not plugged into that world anymore, so I don't know them.
Oh, that's fair. That's entirely fair. Like, the one other like stand-up comedian that came to my mind about someone who is like taking the stand-up craft and kind of doing that in a similar way of Stavros is James Acaster. Like, that's the only one that really does that, because he's basically now made a second career of just doing hecklers only stand-up. But thinking about the Hollywood Handbook episode that was only released on vinyl, let's say we are going to have a one-off episode of VoiceGate that's going to be released on an obscure format. Do you think that's when we do Overgeneration, the history of Overgeneration, we're going to go put it on 8-track for that?
Oh, fun. Yeah. No, what would our physical media release be? That is such a good question. Oh, God. Maybe it's just us doing live commentary over an episode of NXT. That might be the way to do it.
like you're talking about you getting subtweeted by NXT, modern NXT wrestlers, NXT. We're not talking about Black and Gold.
I'm not talking about Samoa Joe's Reign of Terror and the excellent television that was. I'm talking about...
We're not talking about Adrian Neville's great NXT title run.
No, we're recording this on a Tuesday. If I wasn't locked in on playoff baseball, which, by the way, congratulations to the Detroit Tigers on winning game one, but if I wasn't locked in on playoff baseball, I could hypothetically flip over to the CW right now and watch some hot NXT action. I will not be doing that
We don't need to talk about what's on my TV and why I need to finally just cancel the service.
Yeah, you know, I hate myself, but in ways that don't manifest into watching NXT. And I'm very happy that I'm at least at that stage in my life. So I'm not planning on turning that on anytime soon. But if we were going to have a physical media release, I would imagine you're right. It's either let's talk about Overgeneration in depth, or let's live review NXT.
Yeah, like I need to, in the way that Flamita broke my mind at Gata Miane, I need to become disgusted by Sal Ruka's very slow rotating like corner cutter. Like that's what I need.
That's right. That's right. Two topics before we get into the bulk of the Dragon Gate stuff. One wrestling related, one non. We'll start with the non here. I've got stuff to throw at you. It's a big weekend at the box office, Mike Spears. This Friday, The Smashing Machine comes out. I do plan on seeing it this week, and I'm quite excited. The other movie that's out, One Battle After Another. Have you seen this yet?
I haven't yet. It's coming at a week where you know where my attention is going towards, and that is Saturday at 6:30 p.m. right now. Like that's where my attention is. But I've heard nonstop things about how One Battle After Another might end up being PTA's best movie he's ever made.
I can't compare it to anything else because I've only gotten into movies in the last 8 months or so.
Well, we can have the PTA Anderson conversation 6 months from now.
Everybody wants to have it with me, and I can't help them because I haven't seen any of his other movies. I have nothing to compare it to. But my highest recommendation, the only insight I'll give is Sean Penn. If he doesn't run away with Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars this year, in the same way of like Okada winning Flair Fez in 2017 or something, it's that level of, oh my God, there's no one else on the planet that has put forth a supporting effort in the same way that Sean Penn in that movie. And as I was listening to The Big Picture today, they noted, this is not confirmed, but they speculated that Sean Penn might have based that character on Vince McMahon, which I thought was super interesting.
Yeah, I just need to find the time to get into that. And it's just movie season comes at a bad time, like when things are coming out that I'm really interested in, because like I'm right now writing. I don't know if it's a high case with Miami Hurricanes football, number 3 team in the nation right now, but I'm not used to having a team that I feel like is going to win every game. And you have noticed how I consume entertainment going to shows with me over WrestleMania weekend. I'm someone that like I will get into it and stand, clap, and talk to the TV, talk to the wrestlers. I have managed to go so far 4 games into a college football season with my ass firmly placed on my couch, not standing up and talking to the TV once. I don't know what to do with myself with that case.
Well, that's good to hear, because I find it to be so difficult to find people to watch sports with. It's not typically something that I enjoy. I would much rather watch a big game by myself, as I did for most of the Pacers playoff run, because I don't like the way that a lot of other people watch sports, because while I'm super into it, I'm often very reserved and very quiet, and I don't need anybody making a ruckus in my living room. So it's good to see that you and I could sit down and enjoy a Miami football game together, and I think we'd be on the same wavelength.
Yeah, I just kind of the most that I do is talk to the quarterback, and I can do that to myself and no one needs to hear it. You know, this is growth versus where I was during the Dallas Mavericks 2011 run, where I just was a pacing mess during the entire time. I think winning a World Series has changed me, basically.
Yeah. No, I think had the Pacers won the title this year, I think I would have found a happiness that would be indescribable with words, but I do have my 2021 Super Bowl. You do have your 2023 World Series, and that is nice for us.
Your statute of limitations is coming up in 2026. So if you want to start complaining about sports, you might want to start warming yourself up. I still have another 36 months.
Mike, the good news is, especially in the confines of the NFL, I don't have anything to complain about. I have the best head coach in football. Matthew Stafford continues to kill himself for my enjoyment. Puka Nacua has become one of the best receivers in the NFL. And the Rams are 3-1, and we're one field goal away from being 4-0. So I have nothing to complain about. I find it utterly bizarre every year during the NFL preseason when we have to spend time talking about the 49ers and the Seahawks, and maybe this is the Cardinals year. And barring 2022 during a historically injured team, all Sean McVay has done is put out a winning product, be the best coach, develop talent better than almost any other team. I have nothing to complain about, and I can't imagine that changes next year.
You know, I have to say it does kind of feel like a complete difference for having that level of tranquility too. I listen to Dallas Fort Worth like sports podcasts because I want to get into like baseball, hockey, and basketball stuff. I don't care about the Cowboys, but it just seems like this year is like the most like even more agony inducing year for. If you are a Cowboys fan, I don't know how you do it with how this team is. Like, are they really 0-4 when you think about it? Or are they like very close to being like 2-2 right now? It's one of those things that the conversation is endless. And it just like in a way kind of like blows my mind that like all this time is devoted to like an utterly just mediocre franchise for the last 30 years.
I don't know a life where the Cowboys were a good NFL team. That's just not something that I've really experienced. I find, for whatever reason, as somebody that really, I'd like to think, knows a lot of the history of baseball and really enjoys the history of baseball, I watch old basketball for fun. I really like knowing more about the history of the NBA. There is something about the NFL where if it's pre-Brady, it might as well be from 100 years ago. And so I have no, relevance. I don't hold the 90s Cowboys in any prestige. You know, that is so far gone in my mind. I know nothing about them. I did not watch the Netflix documentary.
You never saw a live down of Michael Irvin playing football.
No,
like you,
no.
Yeah, and it like means, you, you know, he's why just, should you have any connection?
No,
you know?
He's the insane talking head on Fox Sports 1. But he means nothing to me overall. It's just a complete, like, again, that team, I know that team's 30 years old now. That team might as well be 300 years old. I don't know what it is, but anything before Elway's two Super Bowl wins, it's just like, oh God, this looks weird. I don't know the names. I don't know the history. And thus the Cowboys, I mean, I understand their relevance in American popular culture, but I don't ever look at them as a legitimate organization nor a team that I should fear, because as long as I've been alive, I haven't had to do that.
No, I don't blame you whatsoever. So you said you had one wrestling thing you wanted to throw at me.
Oh, yeah, just a programming note for everybody up top that next week, the long-awaited, and I did say we'd get back to this as soon as we could, and I apologize for the delay. I think it's now been 2 months since the last one, which is not what I wanted to do. But the long-awaited return of Those Days, a Michinoku Pro retrospective podcast, that will be hitting your feed at the usual time next week. We'll be covering Sasuke versus Onito in a barbed wire match. And if all goes according to plan, we'll be finishing up 1994, which will include the great Sasuke versus Taka Michinoku in a singles match that I don't think I've watched in a decade now, and I'm very, very excited to revisit. And then, of course, there's a Dragon Gate Cork and Hall show next Wednesday. The plan right now, and hopefully this stays to fruition as my schedule will be less hectic going forward as it had been for the last few months, the plan right now is to do a Friday recording for the Cork and Hall show next week and review that there. If not, it'll get bumped to the next week, and we'll just record at our usual time. But the plan right now is Michinoku Pro Those Days, a week from when you're hearing this, and then a Cork and Hall review very shortly after that, because I think I can speak for Mike here when I say that we are quite excited for this upcoming Cork and show.
Yeah, and I think that we could probably expect for monthly Those Days at least to close out 2025. I think
that's the goal. That is the goal.
Yeah, we won't necessarily get 12 episodes done for the year, but we're going to at least break into double digits, I think. And looking in through stuff and where we are at, things are going to get really interesting real quick with the Michinoku Pro as we get into 1995. And yeah, I was putting together my October kind of calendar today, and it's an interesting month for Dragon Gate. It's going to like this Wednesday, October 8th, Cork, and that we'll review next Friday, is easily like the way that they've really like navigated all of this to like really build up these Corkins when we knew that the schedule was going to be kind of flipped on its head. They've at least found a way, at least for me, up until this show coming up, that they have had interesting stuff and they have built the Corkins as like a monthly, if not multiple time a month, big deal for the promotion.
No, that show feels big. I mean, it's what we talked about, where with the scheduling changes just because of building availability, we knew they were either going to really hold the course and produce what could have been boring Cork and Hall shows, or we were going to see some things in Cork and Hall that we don't normally see that I think would reflect a little bit more of what Noah has done in Cork and Hall and what All Japan has done in Cork and Hall over the last few years, where they've really loaded up some of these shows. My biggest surprise in wrestling remains that Dragon Gate is not doing monthly sellouts of Corkins, because I think for the better part of this year, they've had cards on paper and cards that have delivered in actuality that warrant 1,500 people being in that building, and they continue to hover around 1,200, 1,300. These shows never look dire. It never looks like a disaster in this building. You know, when you log on to that Dragon Gate Network stream, it's a healthy amount of people in the building, but it's not the day of sellout. It's not the advanced sellout. And I'm just so surprised by that, because we're seeing some of the most loaded Dragon Gate Corkin shows that we've ever seen. And again, I think it's important to note, just to contextualize that, I think it's less panicking about the box office and more making the most of whatever situation they have going on with the buildings being under construction that they would normally run at this time.
Yeah, and I think that having this kind of schedule presents opportunities to you to do different things on these Corkins. We've seen them over the years have Torimon reunions, Gate of Nostalgias. We've seen them have other things that they've tried to do as a way to have something other than the show that's going to be coming up next Wednesday, which is a stack show with two title matches. And we got some of that last week with the Gate of Miyane 2025 happening from Corkin Hall on the 24th. I have a written review of it up on voicesofwrestling.com. I decided I needed to take time to figure out what exactly who exactly is Seiji Miyane as a part of this, and it kind of provided a little bit more of that. But getting back to the point about Cork and Hall's case, we have Gate of Miyane in there. They end up with about 1,200 attendance with that. And I thought that in my review, I thought it was a very fun show. It makes sense for doing something a little different, what kind of show we got here. But I'm still like a week after watching this match between Jackie Kamei and Flamita versus Luis Monte and Rioya Tanaka, thinking like that might be one of the better matches that's happened in this building for this company that's had a lot of really strong Corkin matches so far this year.
I would say a relatively enjoyable show. You know, I think what's interesting is that you and I haven't talked about this show much other than the one match that you really liked, and I have a different favorite match on this show, and so I'm excited to talk about that. I found this show to perhaps lack the specialness that the first Miyane show had. Even though this was in Corkin and last year's was in Kobe Sambo Hall, I felt like last year's show came across like a bigger deal with the appearances from Bushi and Great Okan. Maybe that's just me. Maybe for some people, the special guests that they brought out on this show and the atmosphere of Corkin Hall did a little bit more for them. I thought this was a very good show in line with most of what they've done in Corkin this year, but it did lack, whether it be a certain freak show element or a truly transcendent match or whatever it may be, it did lack something that I was hoping to get out of this show.
Yeah, I think if you look at the Miyane concept and how things were kind of positioned last year, I think that maybe one of the reasons why it's not feeling as special is that we've seen a lot of cross unit stuff since the Mexico versus Japan thing. So having some of these matchups don't necessarily feel as brand new with it. And I think that they try to at least have people from different promotions show up to support the to support their wrestlers, but I don't know, like, necessarily you don't announce Fujita or Sugiera ahead of time, so you're really not getting that Noah buy-in whatsoever. But I think that Anzai from All Japan had much more of like the interesting kind of like, this is something a little bit different from a normal Dragon Gate factor that I think held true. But I think maybe some of it is just because of the booking decisions over the last year have kind of made some of the specialness, at least with the home army guys, not feel as special.
I think Anzai's inclusion on this show gave me the same feeling as Okan's inclusion last year, which is, this is a clear outsider. This is a guy who doesn't do what Dragon Gate does, and yet I now desperately want to see more of him in this promotion. To me, the star of this show was Yuma Anzai. That was my match of the night. Anzai and Homare versus Kakuta and Kato. I thought that match was absolutely incredible. I thought all four guys played their part. I have more to say on Yoshiki Kato in a minute. But to me, that's the one that jumped out. That was the one match, you know, anybody that's heard this show for any extended period of time knows that I'm not going to be moved by an Ironhead Fujita appearance. My Minoru Suzuki patience, as I think with most people, has long worn off. And I thought Sugiura was fine, but we've also seen Sugiura and Dragon Gate a few times now. So it didn't have me jumping up off my couch going, oh my God, they got Takashi Sugiura. I've seen Takashi Sugiura in this promotion before, and I've seen him in the ring, you know, previously against Shun Skywalker, but nevertheless in the ring with Shun Skywalker.
Yeah, and I think like with Anzai, especially like having him kind of as like this completely different kind of physical specimen be in a match that in a lot of ways he was a lot, he worked complementarily to the style. I thought he really started to gel, but like you get like certain kind of matchups with like him versus Kakuta and Kato that just don't happen in Dragon Gate. Like it's just Kakuta and Kato are two of the towers of the company. No one towers over them, but instead you get to see like actual like true like heavyweight versus heavyweight wrestling that I felt like was a whole lot of fun. And I just, Kakuta's run has, and how they've built up to this title match coming up on Wednesday, I think that they've knocked it out of the park, and especially Kakuta as a lead heel in this match was just incredible, and then what he did in the post-match as well.
Well, the great thing with the Anzai inclusion, specifically with those two guys, is that, and Jay talked a little bit about this when Kakuta went over and worked the Champion Carnival, was that Kakuta was excited on a personal level because he doesn't have the chance to bump around with that many heavyweights. And you see that here with Kakuta and Kato. For as great as those guys are against Kame and Homare and Dragon Kid, you know, throughout Kato's career, he's had very few opportunities to wrestle another true heavyweight. And you see that he's a natural at it, that he and Anzai were able to step into the ring and immediately find a natural chemistry that, for as much as I enjoy Kato and I've held the line on him throughout and I haven't been worried about him once, I do think that he and Anzai were able to unlock something that we just haven't had the chance to see from Kato, especially because now he's in the same unit as Madoka Kakuta. He's in the same unit as Kai. He's in the same unit as Ishin. All the big guys that he could be swinging against, he's teaming against. And so Anzai was this great inclusion, somebody that I already enjoy so much. I did not anticipate him being this good in this environment, even if this match wasn't necessarily the traditional Dragon Gate structure of tag match. But again, star of the show to me, Yuma Anzai. I thought he was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and I love how even within this match, they've with Kakuta in there, like Anzai versus Kakuta, they had the Champion Carnival match here. You feel like that there could be something there. And I know a lot of it is because we need to build up Naruki Doi's show that's coming up in November. And that's part of it. But like the company has like now, like in a way, now have it like dangling in our mind, like, oh, what would a Anzai versus Kakuta Dreamgate match look like? What would Anzai versus Kato and just like a special singles match look like? And you know, that's not what I was expecting kind of coming, but coming onto the show for like, as when this was booked and when was Anzai was announced on Miyanaya, I didn't necessarily thought that this was going to be kind of getting to see this other side of guys that we don't necessarily get to see through Anzai. But I think that just the way that he just kind of worked with Kakuta really makes me want to, makes me wonder that it's like, hey, maybe, you know, do you see if you can get Anzai for a Dreamgate shot in one of these Korakuen shows coming up here? Because feels like that you could get something out of this if they really wanted to.
I completely agree. I'd love to see him back. I was very, very impressed by what he did.
Yeah, so your that was your favorite match on the show. My favorite match is, as I said earlier, the opening tag of Flamita should not be able to have this much physical ability given the amount of physical ability we've seen through him over the last decade, Case. Like, am I just overreacting thinking that like he had like one of those like all-time flyer moments in this match where he goes and does a ring pros quebrada that he rotates, lands flat on his feet. He doesn't stumble back, and then he follows that up by one of the better aranas that I've seen in a long time when Mate just catapults Tanaka on it. I think like Flamita had one of those kind of performances that always that I'm happy Flamita has now been back for over a year, that like we get to see these like reminders, but you're like, oh yeah, Flamita is really great. And he's been great for like a decade now. And he still has every once in a while the ability to kind of turn that back on in a way that I think kind of just takes you back to 2014 in some ways.
So my big talking point this week, the big thing that I want to focus on is Flamita. And the funny thing is that this match, for as enjoyable as it was, wasn't even my favorite Flamita match of the week. And I think that just speaks to the output that he's had, where I can be like, oh yeah, no, that was great, but he also did this other thing. And I think now is the time to have the conversation. I think there's two points to be made here. One is just, since, I mean, I advocated for him to come back to Drengate for a very long time, and I never would have imagined in the spring of 2024 that this is the output we would have gotten from Flamita in now the second stage of his Dragon Gate career. I mean, he has so far exceeded my already high expectations for him in a way that I just can't believe. I said this earlier today because Striga on Twitter mentioned how much he enjoyed Flamita versus Tanaka, which is the other Flamita match from this week that I so greatly enjoyed. And I think it's worth noting that Flamita has not always been this wrestler. He has not always been this dependable, cut to him at a moment's notice, no matter the opponent, and he's going to shine so bright wrestler. And I think specifically within the context of the Tanaka match, he's doing things as a singles wrestler that he's never done before. But even if you just want to focus on this tag match for a minute, you know, he's in there with three other world-class wrestlers. And as he continues to do, I think Flamita was the most exciting guy of the bunch. I think he was the best guy of the bunch. I think that's the important distinction here, is that for most of his career, he's been able to be the most exciting guy in the match that he's in. I think very rarely has he been able to be the best guy and the match that he's in. And I think we witnessed two really high-end Flamita matches from this past week where he was subsequently the most exciting guy and the best guy. And that is the difference between Flamita now and, say, Flamita in the late 2010s.
Yeah. Did you have anything else you want to touch on Miyane, or do we just want to get into the Brave Gate match now?
Oh, God. Do I have anything else on Miyane real quick? Let me look at this card. If you haven't seen it yet, I enjoyed Jay's commentary on Mao and Yoshioka and the story he told about the moving company.
That was great. All-time storytelling that happened there. And then everyone deciding to that Yoshioka was Mao for the remainder of the match and the crowd going along with it.
I really enjoyed the 3 minutes of Jason Lee and Mochizuki Jr. versus Minoru and Rita that we got. I was very disappointed by that finish. And I thought the main event was good. I don't think the main event was a waste of time by any means, but it was the lesser of the two all-star tag matches on that show, but still not bad.
Yeah, I think that having Minoru Suzuki play off of Shun kind of like tamped down some of the little bit of Shun's cartoonishness a little bit, and that helped out. But like Yamato's willingness just to get the shit kicked out of him throughout that match was incredible. But I have my written review. I thought it all in all was a fun show, but the only stuff really worth calling home about was the Anzai tag and the opener, really.
I would agree with that.
But this Open the Breakaway title match that main evented Sunday's Kobe Sambo Hall show, Ryoya Tanaka pulling off the treble, being able to have three Brave Gate defenses in one calendar month after defeating Flamita with his startup dust press. Flamita getting to kind of get to big brother Tanaka a little bit through this match, and the amount of like smooth reversals that I felt like that you saw, because I feel like Tanaka's stuff doesn't necessarily always aid to like the most like flowing, like the Crimson Smash cutter is a move that, I mean, is a little bit of staging, but I felt like him and Flamita, that there was a level of chemistry here that I felt like that Flamita was able to kind of bring out some of the best of Tanaka that we've seen so far in this Brave Gate run, and it made Tanaka feel like an absolute star, kicking out the Flam Fly and getting the win.
Yeah, you know, the Tanaka Brave Gate run I've become completely fascinated by, because as we approach now the final quarter of the year, I'm starting to figure out who the 50 best wrestlers are and where they might shake up. And I think the last few Tanaka matches really have me thinking about his place in wrestling's top 50 this year, because I think he's easily one of the 50 best wrestlers in the world. And if you go back to the UT match in which he won the title, you know, that was a really enjoyable match with a really disappointing finish. And I think that all, like, if he just hits the Stardust Press in that match, I think we all think about this Tanaka reign in an even more different light, in an even more positive way. Now, ultimately, he didn't, and we think about that match and his reign as a whole a specific way because of the finish of that match. But if you remove what I thought was a pretty disappointing Mochizuki match from the equation, the June defense, the Kame defense, the Fuda defense, and now the Flamita defense, something's happening here, and something pretty special is happening here. And I think this Flamita match was just another example of A, Ryoya Tanaka being just brilliant at what he does and rising to the occasion, whereas, you know, we had this stretch of Dreamgate runs, you know, from Hyo in 2022 on, kind of up through when Daya got the title last year, where the belt was on a lot of wrestlers that I enjoy, and I don't feel like they made the most of their opportunity, and I don't think they rose to the occasion. And Daya, by the end of that title reign, was able to flip that. Yamato's one match with Daiki provided us with some Daiki brilliance. I'm all about that. The UT reign, I thought, was stellar. And now you get this Tanaka reign, which is what's needed. This extended Brave Gate run post-Daya. Daya did so much rehab for the image of this title and the lineage and legacy of the Brave Gate belt. And now you see Tanaka trying to take it to new heights. And I think he's been the perfect champion for it. The line that I always use, which is now by proxy the line that Dave Meltzer always uses, is that Ryoya Tanaka looks like he was created in a Dragon Gate lab to be a wrestler. And sometimes, no matter how much the world changes, no matter how much the roster changes, no matter how much time goes by, you just have an idea of what an Open the Brave Gate champion and Open the Brave Gate championship matches should look like. And I think there is something inherently comforting about Tanaka, his look, and the matches that he's having with this title. And this Flamita match was no different.
Yeah, and especially if you want to like look at this as like a portent of the future for him, I think that like when you talk about him being like lab grown for this Brave Gate run really was going to be an opportunity for him to really show that when we get to a point where people of his class and of his age are really doing the challenges of it, you already now have the confidence that he kind of was not weighed down by a singles belt, but instead made it his own in that like general Brave Gate idea. But I went through it on my solo showcase last week. He is very quickly having one of the, at least statistical, very special Brave Gate runs in the company's history. I mean, he's at a point right now where there's not very many high single digit defense title runs. And just by having a month like this, at least like as the kind of historians that we are, Case, I feel like that he is not only like checking like the checkbox of, okay, you are the Dragon system like prototype, you fulfilled this mandate here, now we're ready to see you as in the tag realm, or we're ready to see you get moved up the card a little bit, but you're also getting to have something where I feel like unless like there is just it falls completely apart in the next title defense that he has and he loses the belt, this has already become one of the better or at least more historically notable title runs just because of how quickly he's doing all these title defenses. It makes you wonder, all right, he has nothing booked in October so far, but we know that they have two nights and Edeon 2 coming up here. He's going to have an Edeon 2 to title defense, I feel like. So we might be like at a point where it's November, December, and he might be knocking on the door for one of like the defense records.
This is what I brought up when he won the title was, I think with Tanaka and the way that his body is and the ceiling that he has, I think you're only going to get one shot at this. And I think Dragon Gate knows that. I think, you know, for as great as Tanaka is in this specific role that we've seen him largely throughout his entire career, but specifically this run as Brave Gate champion, I think for as great as he is there, everybody agrees that this is only the beginning for his career and that at some point he'll be in the same position that Shun Skywalker and Yamato were at Kobe World this past summer. So it seems like they're treating this Tanaka reign as we've got one shot to do this. We're going to do it right. And Ryo Tanaka is going to win a ton of matches in the process. And I'm very, very glad that they're doing that. Again, you know, he's only held the belt for 80 days. He's sort of halfway in between in terms of duration as Brave Gate champion in history. You know, he's going to clear Kanda. He's going to clear Dragon Kid. And he's going to clear Genki Horiguchi and Ishin here pretty soon. That'll get him to 100 days. And then from there, he still has quite a bit of time before he would hit, obviously, Pac's run at 447 days, Kaito Ishida's run at 365 days, or Dragon Kid's run at 364 days. Those are your top three Brave Gate champions of all time in terms of title length, title reign length, that is. I don't see him being champion that long. I don't No. see him combating that record, that legacy. I do think he has a real chance. If my memory serves me correct, Pac is the one with the most defenses in a single reign. And I think Tanaka could beat that. And it would not shock me at all if he does.
Yeah. So he is at five right now. The first Yoshino or the second Yoshino run had six. Pac had 11. He had 11.
11.
11. Then Dragon Kid and Flamita both at nine. So after he gets like past six, like six is the big, I would say the big threshold into being the actual like defense record thing. And I think that's what's kind of in play here. Like
if you
there's
look at
no
the,
way.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's no way he goes for the length record, but I mean, he gets past seven defenses. He's instantly tied for fourth longest defenses with Dragon Kid and Flamita at nine. Both tied in second and Pac at 11. So it's not hard to see him getting at seven by the end of this year.
No, I mean, you go back and you look at Kaito Ishida's year-long reign, and granted, part of this was COVID, but he also had an empty arena defense in Kobe Lapis Hall in the middle of this, but Ishida won the belt in November of 2019 from Susumu. He defends it against Jason Lee at Final Gate, Genki Horiguchi at Champion Gate, Kaisuke Okuda at an empty arena, Yosuke Santamaria at Dangerous Gate, and then loses it at Gate of Destiny. He held the belt for an entire year. He had four successful defenses. Tanaka's almost done that in a month.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think that it's worth, I'm glad that we're taking the time to talk about it because it, across like all the belts, no one has had three successful defenses in a month. Like I just off the top of my head, like even at times where like the Triangle Gate was getting a bunch of defenses, you get two in a month, not three. Like this is remarkable. It's historic.
So I guess we've got to play this game real quick. We might have done this a few weeks ago, but I just want to update it now that we're through the Flamita defense. If you're going to do the Tanaka thing where he's going to challenge Pac, big picture, not including any outsiders, the name still left on that list, you could talk me into a Kazi defense. I actually think that would be incredibly interesting. You've got Dragon Daya, if you want to do that. You got Dragon Kid, maybe Kagatora. If Kagatora could slim down, I'm not going to put Susumu on that list, although I would love to see Tanaka versus Susumu. I'll put Kagatora instead. I think you'd get one of those guys. Daiki Onigiuchi has to be on that list. Hyo has to be on that list. Rita Jr. I don't think there's anybody from the new heel unit that could challenge.
No, they need a skinny guy quick.
Yeah, and then, if you want to throw Genki, Maria, Estrella, one of those three, definitely not all of those three, but maybe one of those three.
And you could put Punch in that group. Punch would be in that group. You don't want him in that group.
I wouldn't, but you could put Punch in that group.
But your point still stands.
Yes.
He's at five right now, and we're not even having to really consider Punch Tominaga to beef up this.
I lost track. Let's go in the order of the roster. KZ would be six, Daya would be seven, Dragon Kid would be eight, Kagatora would be nine, Daiki Onigiuchi would be 10, Hyo would be 11, Rito 12, Junior 13, and then, yeah, that Punch, Genki, Estrella, Maria, whatever that is, you're looking at a possible 14 defenses, and that's with no outsiders.
Yeah, I mean, if Kotoka is really coming back and working with his classmate for Shinshiro Takagi, maybe you could talk him into that, and that there, we're going to get up to 20 very quickly if we really put effort into it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I see it at the very least. I think he could flirt with 13 or 14 pretty easily here. I think you could get a rematch in there. I think anybody would chomp at the bit to see Kame again. I think anybody would be quite excited to see Flamita again based on the match we just saw. I think Yuti, the further this reign goes along, you could always have him challenge again. Rio Fuda, there's something happening there. I think I have a different take on the Fuda stuff than almost everybody else does, but it would not shock me if 6 months down the line, Fuda's back in contention for the Brave Gate belt, whatever it may be. I just think there's a lot there, and I'm quite excited for Tanaka. I'm glad this run, after what I thought was, again, a pretty shaky Mochizuki match, I'm glad this run has shaped out in the way that it has. If anything, just because we're already at a point where 2 months into this run, it already feels like whoever beats Tanaka for that Brave Gate belt is going to be a big deal. And not to reiterate myself, but it just goes back to that sort of that post-Ishida Brave Gate blob of, Okuda and Horiguchi and Nakage and Nakento and Adaya, Hyo, Minorita Lee, Ishin, KZ, Ishin, Hyo, where outside of maybe a few SB Kento defenses, undoubtedly, Kento versus UT in their hometowns felt like a big match. And I guess Kento versus Okuda and Osaka did have a certain level of luster to it. But it's been a long time since the Brave Gate belt has felt this important. A lot of that is a credit to Daya. A lot of that is a credit to the way that they handled this Yamato stuff. And I'm very impressed that they got out of that the way that they did, with hindsight showing us that the timing of it was right. They nailed the UT win. Tanaka is a stardust pressed away from nailing his victory at Kobe World. And since then, again, I feel like this is the most lively the Brave Gate division has been in really quite some time.
Yeah, and I think that the one kind of surprise coming out of Kobe was that Tanaka didn't immediately have another challenger set up, really.
Yeah, because, absolutely.
Because throughout the match, it was clear by the time that by the end of the Miyane opener that these two guys had a match like this in them, and it was really neat to see a Kobe Sambo Hall show that had issues, because you were going up against New Japan at World Hall but you did not have any issues in getting people into the building for this. Like, they ended up still having a pretty decent house that was really loud and into it towards the finish of this match. Like, this was a really special kind of Brave Gate match happening in a building that I felt like this overall show, just talking about the September 28th Kobe Sambo Hall show had a lot of notable stuff go on it, and it, like, the way that they have really, like, booked this focus into, really, it feels like that there aren't any blow-off network shows this year, and that has been one of the adaptations to the schedule. That case, I know that this was like a 2.5 hour show that you had about two matches they could completely just X out of and get out in 2 hours, but I think that the company has, again, like, these network shows have been some of the real compelling storytelling leading us to what's going to happen in Wednesday in Cork and Hall. I really enjoyed this Kobe Sambo Hall show. What were your overall thoughts about it?
I enjoyed the show quite a bit. You know, there's three things on this show that I had opinions on: Ryo Fuda, the overall state of Mochizuki Dojo, and then I just want to go back to Flamita here real quick. I want to circle back to the Flamita point that I was making earlier, which is that, I mean, this is the best work of his career, right? I know he was, from the end of 2013 to, let's say, 2015, sort of the end of the millennials, I know he was one of the most exciting wrestlers on earth, but this, am I alone in thinking that he has just upped his game to a degree that I didn't see coming?
I think that if you, like, take him as, like, his full portfolio of work, it's a lot more consistent here than it was back in 2013, 2014. Like, Flamita Bravegate matches were special, but it was not necessarily the Millennials Trios match that we remember Flamita for of that era, right? Whereas I think Flamita has really matured into being one of the very best wrestlers on the planet, especially over the last 12 months. And he just didn't necessarily have that dimensionality to him back then during the millennials days.
That's where I'm at, is that, you know, there's a few tiers of wrestlers that just undoubtedly are better than Flamita. You know, the Kyle Fletchers, the Místicos, the Hechiceros of the world, they're off doing their own thing. And then there's that second tier of Kakuta and Skywalker and Hangman Page. And, you know, I'm very intrigued by the amount of praise Moxley has gotten lately as somebody that's woefully behind on AEW right now. I see a ton of Moxley chatter and it's all positive. So you want to throw him in that list, feel free. But I do feel like as you enter that third tier of wrestler, you're 21 to 50. I think Flamita sort of has to be in that conversation. And just looking back on the year that he's had, I'm just looking at his singles matches from that Bravegate run, because that was already 11 years ago. You know, that's basically ancient history, where he wins the belt from Horiguchi. He's got the match that everybody remembers against Susumu. That is the match that has defined Flamita's career. It will always define his career. It's the reason he got bookings for a decade, was because of that match with Susumu. There's a Kagetora match that I don't believe I ever saw, and then the Dragon Kid match at Kobe World, an Aoki Tanizaki match from Dangerous Gate that I don't remember, the KZ match from Korakuen that was one of the big KZ breakout matches, and then Kanda and Saito, I don't remember those matches, and then he loses the belt via DQ to Punch Tamanaga at Final Gate that year. And he had enjoyable singles matches sprinkled in throughout the next decade, notably one clunker against Pac, maybe the worst match that Pac has had post WWE, and one of the most disappointing Dragon Gate matches in recent memory at Gate of Destiny 2018. But you look at what he's done since he came back. That Brave Gate match with Hyo last year, that was spectacular. The Tanaka match in Osaka last year, that I had people blowing me up in real time going, you got to open your laptop, you got to turn on this show, this match is so, so good. The Dragon Kid match before the injury, before the Boss Flam Fly, was on its way to being, I thought, a spectacular match. And then you look at him here against Tanaka in this singles match, not to factor in any of the Team Mexico stuff that he's done this year. And I just think the version we're getting of Flamita now is far superior to, say, Demonic Flamita or late stage PWG Flamita or Millennials era Flamita. I really think this guy has turned the corner. And after what seemed like a career that was going to be largely recognized as an early peak in a long plateau, I think he has once again spiked it. I don't think enough people realize the level that he's wrestling at now. And I know that when I submit my SFM 50 and I have this guy as, you know, a top 25, at worst top 35 guy, I know a lot of people are going to scoff at that, but I think he's doing the work that is deserving of that level of ranking.
Yeah, and it's just so kind of great to see, like, after like the decade that he had, that now he's putting out the best work of his career. Like that doesn't really tie into any sort of rankings or anything like that, but like just the feel good aspect of what all he like went through with like Lucha Underground and AAA, getting his way back into Dragon Gate proper and just doing the best work that we've seen him do has been really just a very heartwarming thing to kind of see after the year
he's had. Incredibly abnormal for him to do what he's been doing, and I think that's part of the reason that I'm so obsessed with it, is we don't see this a lot. There was no indication when Flamita got off the plane from South Korea last year that we were going to be in for an all-time Flamita run, for him to completely change the trajectory of his career. But I'm so glad that he's here. I mean, I was devastated when he went home for the first time last year, because I thought there was a chance that we wouldn't see him again. And he was so good on that first tour, and it seemed like there was more there. And now, I mean, I know he's going to go home at some point. And I say this, you know, during a time in which I'm really enjoying this promotion, and I think the roster is really deep. But you take Flamita off these shows, and you're going to feel it immediately.
I don't know if he would be the number one thing that would completely change the tenor of the shows, but he would be up there, I feel like, to say at the very least.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
And you mentioned Rio Fuda. Rio Fuda opened the show with his singles match that he made after the Osaka show last week. So Rio Fuda versus Masaaki Mochizuki goes to a time limit draw where they are still trying to kick each other's head off right as the bell rang 15 minutes. But I think more notably than that, Fuda kicking out of the twister leading up into that closing stretch, trying to go for the Hiryu, not managing to land it. And it's a Fuda match versus a Mochizuki case. So I thought that was a pretty good match.
That's exactly it. You know, I continue to wait for Rio Fuda to do this against anybody that isn't Masaaki Mochizuki. But until then, I guess we're in a good position where we're settling for really enjoyable Fuda versus Mochizuki matches.
Yeah, because what you ended up having in this one was Fuda trying to start off with the kicks and then thinking, oh, I'm going to try to whittle him down. And then instead of Masaaki Mochizuki, one of the smartest wrestlers of his generation, you know, going for like a stomach punch or just going for the neck, he goes like, well, I trained this kid, I know he's a kicker, I'm going to take his knee. And that really turning it that on to him and adding that aspect I feel like kind of set this match apart differently. It's like such a completely different match from his debut against Mochizuki, but it did feel like a lot of a teacher versus student match where the teacher wasn't able to put down his students, and that would lead to events later on in the show.
And let's talk about the fate of Mochizuki Dojo.
So, well, a lot of things happened for Mochizuki Dojo on the show after months of kind of just not a lot of stuff happening for him. Fuda goes to the time limit draw with Mochi in the opener. Then you have Akihiro Sahara and Daiki Anikiuchi versus Rita and Mochizuki Jr. of Love and Peace. And I don't have the exact day count, Kates, but after over 2 years, Daiki Anikiuchi has scored a direct fall with his Guchadora Tsukadora variant on Jr. Big upset. Kobe pops off for this, and then the three of them then say that they are leaving Mochizuki Dojo, and Mochizuki Dojo has disbanded. And that's it for the 8 months Mochizuki Dojo case.
I don't think we needed another day of Mochizuki Dojo. And look, I loved this unit. You know, the selfish part of me that doesn't care about the storylines in this promotion, I could watch these guys team together all the time. I think it's such a huge bummer that Sahara got hurt when he did, and we missed out on a few months of Mochizuki Dojo multi-man matches. But as somebody that is invested in the booking and wants to see these guys progress and wants to see wants to see these guys grow. This couldn't have come at a better time. I mean, you had to do this now. I could not watch Daikiana Gyuchi lose another match. I'm fascinated by the fact that they're continuing to try with Ryo Fuda post Brave Gate match. Akihiro Sahara, you and I have both said enough about him, and I think we both think the world of him. So I am incredibly excited for what this means coming out of this angle. Let's throw facts and logic out of the window, Mike. Let's just go with our heart here and feel emotions for a minute. Your desire,
cancer. This is what I'm built for.
Exactly. And I know you're always telling me facts over feelings, but I'm going to ask you to use your feelings on this one.
All right, sure.
Your first desired outcome for Fuda, Yanagiuchi, and Sahara, what would you like to see their next steps be? And then I'll ask you what you think will happen. But first, let's just go with your desire.
With my desire, first off, we're getting a time machine and we're taking Akihiro Sahara back to 1987 and we're going to have him do some tag teams with Ron Simmons.
Okay. All right. I can see that you're really in your bag on this one. Go ahead.
Yeah. I've just been like over the last few weeks since we haven't talked. The idea that we have someone in Dragon Gate who wrestles like a territory era former college football player just rocks. And for him, at least, I kind of want to see him kind of find a place that lets him kind of develop those, like, the power instinct and, like, the idea that this guy wants to be a power fighter. I want to see him getting paired up with a power fighter and have him kind of go more, but more with like that kind of tutelage, because I think arguably you look at Mochizuki Dojo, he came in as like a rookie. He's not necessarily getting that much out of where his place was before and after, because I would argue kind of at the same place where you'd expect him to be at this time of his career. But I want to see him get paired up with like a Benkei or get paired up with a Luis Monte. I want him to kind of work the power. Maybe Sahara needs to go train with Don Fuji for a little bit. That's where I want to go with my feelings with Sahara. How about you?
I would like to see Sahara be the third head in a unit that I think is only going to get bigger, but the third man in the Shun Skywalker Hamare unit. Have him pair up with his generational peer and Hamare, and let's go from there. I think, you know, with that, now you're going to see interesting matchups of Sahara and Kakuta, Sahara and Minoru, Sahara Lee, and Sahara and Ishin, and Sahara and Kato in particular.
And that would let Hamare move up and stop taking falls.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I like that. Ryo Fuda. I want Ryo Fuda to have to team with Paradox for about 12 months and get all the kicking out of this system. I feel like that the big thing that Fuda got out of the Mochizuki Dojo situation was that now he does an air raid crash in the Hiryu, like as finishes. That's kind of, it provided stability for him. You got that Brave Gate match. Now I want to see him as a actual Dragon Gate wrestler, not as a karate guy who can't find his way to be on cards consistently. And I think the way to that is that he becomes then the new Paradox assistant.
I'm intrigued by that. You know, I don't think Glate is going to be an appropriate response for what to do with Ryo Fuda. So I will.
I don't think Glate will be here next year. Looking at how bad this house they have from this weekend was.
Oh, I didn't see this.
It was like 150 in Shinkiba.
Jesus Christ. Let me pull up this card now. We're an hour in. We can pivot to Glade for just a second.
No. I got most of my Glade out last week, by the way.
I got to go back and listen. I heard you talk Secret Base, and I'm excited to listen to that. Okay, so 918 Tokyo City Hall. Is that what the show was?
No, that is Gotanda, where they only got 160 people for Evolution versus Triple Lovehawk.
Okay, this there's a Shinkiba show.
Yeah, there was a Shinkiba show this Sunday.
Let me see if Puriso Spirit has it, because now I'm going to have to do this live on the air, because I'm super curious.
You're going to have to scroll, because it's Glade on this, and yes, they do.
Yeah, but I didn't see it on Cage Match, so let me...
Oh, actually, they did 266 in Nagoya for this show. That's a little better than I expected.
Okay, so I got to scroll to the bottom here. Thank God. Pure Exo Spirit is one of those websites that when that goes away, we're all going to be fucked. There's so much ready to find information on this website that places are not doing.
Daily website check. If I had a blog reader still, I would every day look forward to getting this with Cubs fan every day. You know,
like when? Oh, was it? No, when was the Shinkiba show? I don't see it.
I'm sorry, I got the venue wrong. This is Nagoya Diamond Hall.
I gotcha. Okay, Nagoya Diamond Hall, 9/28/25. Minoru Tanaka, Ryo. This computer's very far away from me right now.
Ryo Itaka and Tomoaki Hama looking.
Thank you. Sorry, I just realized as we were talking, my laptop's really far away from me right now. Demanji and then two people I haven't heard of. Soma Watanabe and Shima against Katsuyuka Nakajima and Kentaro Hachishu, who I don't know. Lindemann.
He's the hairy guy that is with Ibushi.
Okay, that is not a selling point for me. And then your main event, as I bounce around here, G-Infinity title match, team decision match, Yamamura and Junji versus Shida and Sakamoto versus Kawakami and Brass Knuckles June. Yeesh, God almighty, that is just...
Oh, by the way, you want to know who their opponents are in that G-Infinity decision match? In Corkin, by the way.
Oh, what's going on there?
Oh, it's Shima and Kurishio, Tokyo, Japan.
Oh, I see who won that match. Of course, it's the least interesting of the three teams. Got it. That's cool. I do see on that Cork and, okay, T-Hawk versus Shinya Aoyoki. And
yeah.
And Nakajima versus Lindemann. I mean, I guess in
it's
theory.
It's the last bullets.
I'm intrigued by those matches in theory. And then I also see that in the opening match, my guy Yukimitsu Takahashi, who's one of Ibushi's students, he's going to be on that show. That is a guy that, I mean, if there was ever a legal excuse to kidnap somebody, if I was running a Japanese dojo, I would have that kid with a bag over his head and his hands behind his back and thrown in a van so quickly so that I could take him and mine his potential, because it's not going to happen here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Where is Shima on this show? Oh, yeah, he's in the main event. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, it's... this promotion is just...
It's the day awful. After Dragon Gate's Corkin, by the way.
Oh, really? Oh, that's... Okay, that's going to be interesting. I have a feeling, even though the advanced tickets for Dragon Gate sales right now, as we're recording this about 12 hours after the card came out, the advanced ticket sales, you know, it's not mind-blowing. There's tickets still available, trust me, but I have a feeling Dragon Gate's going to put a few more people in the building for that Cork and then Glatewell. I mean, God, this promotion. And maybe you talked about this last week, and I apologize if you did, but...
Oh, no worries.
Like, when did it just completely fall apart? Was it when they did the angle
explosion
last year with the GM? The Kawakami angle last year with all that. Is that when it just completely fell apart?
Yeah, but they find new ways to fall apart even deeper since. I mean, I would say the explosion thing, because that brings in Nakajima, and Nakajima has never been the answer really to anything. Like, I mean, that's really... The sad thing about Nakajima is All Japan got the 10 good months out of him that you could, and then that left the rest of him to Glate. But I mean, it's gotten even darker since Issei Onitsuka's suspension and retirement. Like, there is an air of death around this promotion. Like, it just does not feel like it's in a good place. Like,
it
more
doesn't.
So, like, more so than they have over the last few years, because, like, So that Tokyo Dome City Hall show that had Evo, Suwama, all of them there. Like Suwama, Zones, and why am I blanking on the Giant? I can't believe I am doing that right now. Tsuji Ishikawa gets 160 people for that show. I did not realize this until I started like doing more like kind of research into stuff for last week's case. I forget if I said this on air or not. It's a part of Tokyo Dome City Hall, that venue that only they run. Tokyo Dome City Hall case, if you remember, is like the most expensive venue, at least for a long time, for promotions in Japan. How are they running this venue that they're only getting 160 people in a place that is normally running, that people don't run because it's like three times the cost of Corken Hall?
I
know, Pudge.
I
that's how
not,
I feel about it, too.
I am not going to answer that question because I'm sure they're doing it in a legal and just and not sketchy way whatsoever. And I think we should leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, probably just telling us to back away from the
Just, it feels like that's a territory that I don't want to go into. But man, that I tell you, man, every time I look at their cards, I am just blown away by how bad it looks.
They're bringing Hanaoka for that Korokan at least. Which is bad. Because that means he won't go work Dragon Gate stuff for a while.
What are Kento and Takuma doing? I know, sorry, the show's going a little bit off the rails. We've got more to cover.
Yeah, no,
but
it's all right.
Because I don't see them.
They're working AAA. They have found a place for them as like workers in AAA that don't make the WWE AAA stuff, like filling out the house shows and stuff.
Okay. When was the last time they worked late? That was...
It's been a minute, like several months.
May is the last time, or I'm sorry, the June Korokan show was the last time that Puro Riso Spirit has. Let me look at their cage match real quick, because I admittedly haven't...
They dropped the belts to Yamamura and Onitsuka on that show, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, June 1 Korokan. Glate version 17, 661 in attendance. Ishida versus Lindemann in the main event. I'm sure I would love that. They literally had a match of the year contender 2 years ago in Osaka. I have not heard a single person mention that match. And then, yeah, they're doing Tokyo Bad Boys with, was it Czech Shimotani?
Yeah, it's Czech. He's now Nobu-san. But yeah, no, that's pretty... I haven't seen any mention of them like ever like breaking the barrier into getting into WWE stuff, but they
They look like shit. They're not going to pay them and put them on TV. They're going to put Zima Ion on TV. And I don't know what his name is there, but I love Zima Ion. Like, more power to him. I hope he makes more money than he's ever made in his life, but they're not going to put Takuma Fujiwara on their TV show. They don't want Laredo Kid on that show.
Yeah, Takuma is not looking good these days either.
So much potential in that guy. It is crazy that is where his career has ended up.
As a complete aside, as we're completely off the beaten path here, got this tweeted into my timeline, a new Noah t-shirt. Have like this 1980s cartoon Ata t-shirt that looks pretty sweet.
Can you send me that? Because I saw those shirt designs, but I did not see the Ata one.
Yeah. It's the one that like they have like six of them, and it's like, yeah, I'll drop it into Slack right now.
Thank you. I would like to see that. I see a Slack notification from Mike Spears. That's always good news. And I see Kano. I see Kenta Ozawa.
Bottom right hand corner.
Kimia. Thank you. It's the last one. Oh my god, that's super cool.
Yeah, like that is a really like, I love that style of wrestling art, like the 1980s. Like, I have a Great Muta t-shirt from WCW era. From that time, and I like what they're doing with like these like stand-ups that they're doing, because like, they have Ato stand-ups as well for these guys.
I genuinely say this, I mean, I hope Ato's feeling very fulfilled in his career in Noah, because they seem to take him as about as seriously as you can take a Noah junior heavyweight. He's always in the mix. He's got the Hiromu match coming up, and I think that is a separation, whereas, you know, for Kento and Takuma, Dragon Gate was able to recover. And I said from the jump when they announced that they were let go by the company, this will hurt far more in the short term than it will the long term. And that's how it played out. And the Ata thing, I think, has just been incredibly beneficial for both sides. You know, I would have loved to have seen what Ata was going to do with either Maria or what Ata would have done post Los Perros del Mal de Japón. But the fact that he was able to slowly transition out of the company to a point that when he left, it wasn't it wasn't news. Everybody was going, oh, I thought he had already gone, to him now doing what he's doing in Noah, which again isn't largely for me, but he does seem to be taken seriously over there, which makes me happy. That is almost like the Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff trade in the NFL, where it seems like it couldn't have worked out better for either side.
Yeah, Ata gets like an appearance at Kobe World Cannon Hall this weekend out of all of this. And that was a feeling going like, oh, New Japan's playing Overdrive the Mirage right now, because Ata's having the JHC Junior match against Hiromu at Sumo Hall.
Is that on a New Japan show or a Noah show?
Oh, it's the Noah one coming up in 2 weeks. It's the one that Shun's teaming with Sugiura on.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, I got you now. I was like, oh man, did I miss that Aita's going to be doing New Japan? I'm actually going to get up and excited about that. But no, I see what you're saying now. Yeah, Wrestle Odyssey with Fujita, Minoru Suzuki, Shigeru and Shun versus Indo and Hayata, Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf, Daga and Daikyo Tashima. You know what? Credit to Pro Wrestling Noah. That is about as interesting of a card as they could put together. I'm into that.
And considering no Ozawa, that's pretty much as big as what they can do. They're bringing in your New Japan guys. You're bringing in Shun. Like they're loading up that Sumo Hall show.
Yeah, I have not watched Noah in months at this point, but I knew that Aita versus Hiromu was happening. That was sort of the only thing on my radar. And then I knew that there was an Alpha Wolf Dragon Bane match that was getting a lot of buzz that I had been meaning to check out, whatever the Korakuen match they had a few weeks ago was, against maybe it was Alejandro and Kai Fujimori. I think that was the match that everybody was raving about. So I'm going to check that out. But good for Noah. I'm into that show. That's awesome.
So we didn't say what our emotional next steps are for Daiki Yanagiuchi for both of us.
Yes, I've got an answer. Do you have an answer?
Oh, yes. I want him to go into his dark, dark energy and turn heel and be the heel Lost Post.
Ah, this is the problem with this show. Sometimes we are just on the same wavelength, and I agree. And this kind of can lead us into the conversation of, well, what do you think is actually going to happen? And I know that people are leaning towards Fuda turning heel, and I get that, and it would not surprise me if he ends up turning heel. But this feels like a Dragon Gate thing where they are making one scenario so obvious that it can't possibly be the actual scenario that occurs. And I think what we're seeing here is Fuda's going to get, I think, a legitimate babyface push coming out of this. Now, it might just be a push so that a younger heel, i.e. a Daiki Yanagiuchi, can beat him. But I think Fuda is going to be a babyface, and I think either Sahara or Yanagiuchi is turning heel. And I think it's way more interesting if Yanagiuchi turns heel.
Yeah, like a most interesting scenario, I think you keep the three of them together through a triangle gate challenge.
God, that would be nice. I hadn't thought about that, but I'm really into that idea.
Yeah, and I guess what I would do, because you already have the Dreamgate match going up, and people are going to hate this, I go no contest with the match on Wednesday and then do a three-way and then have Daiki cost everyone and get the win over to Gaja Dokuro and then become the Shrimpy Katoka of Gaja Dokuro.
Wait, what's happening here? What match is going to no contest?
Oh, Saipatra versus Gaja Dokuro on Wednesday. I want that one to go to a no contest, and then we have a rematch three way. Somehow the three of them get involved. I don't know how I'm going to book my way into that, but during a three way with Saipatra, Gaja Dokuro, and the former Mochizuki Dojo, that's when Daiki should turn during that. Like, build it up a little bit.
I gotcha. Okay, I thought you meant the Dreamgate match, and I was going to say no.
Now,
look, I disagree with what you said anyways, but I disagree less because it's not the Dreamgate match. I don't want to see anything in a no contest, but okay, all right. Maybe we've had enough podcasting for tonight. If Mike is advocating for a Dreamgate Korakuen match, no contest.
That Dreamgate match is why you can go to a no contest in the Triangle Gate one.
Oh man, yeah. No, I think it's not going to shock me at all if Fuda's the one that ends up turning heel, because I think out of these three guys and just the way these units are already filled up, I think one of them is going to be with Shun. I think one of them is going to turn heel, and I think one of them is just going to stay a babyface and not make that much of an impact in whatever unit that he joins. And I understand why the betting odds favorites would be for Fuda to turn heel, but I think it's way more interesting if Daiki does it, and I think it's predictable and somewhat exciting if Sahara is the one that does it.
Yeah, Sahara would be okay. The big beef boys get even more big and beefy. This is a good time for him to do the turn. I mean, that's the one thing for all three of them is that they have the roster time at the point where they can turn, and it feels like it's then the right next step for them, I guess.
And so specifically with Sahara, you can have him turn on Homare. So there's a legitimate reason for him to join the heel unit. It's just a matter of whether or not they want to do that.
But it's about time for these three. Like, I wonder if Sahara was healthier, if this would happen a little sooner. I do think that the Brave Gate and Sendai was such like a, we have to do this. We've been wanting to do this for a few years. So maybe it was kind of planned for this, like regardless of the injury. But I think for like Mochizuki Dojo arriving the way it did this time, considering that you had Hamare and then Kazuma Kimura kind of come and like instantly lap anyone in the dojo, it was time. And it fulfilled its purpose, arguably. And I think that the three of them, at least, their futures are brighter coming out of the unit than they were going into it.
I think when you compare this incarnation to the original one, I mean, objectively, what the original Mochizuki Dojo did for Shun Skywalker, it would have been impossible to replicate that this second time around. I do think that the first Mochizuki Dojo significantly helped the career of Keisuke Okuda, and then he ran into his own issues. I think it somewhat benefited Coach Minora, and I think Yuki Yoshioka was largely a net neutral in that unit. Here, it by the end of it, very much benefited Ryo Fuda. I think it somewhat benefited Daiki Yanagiuchi, and he will always have that Brave Gate match against Yamato, and I think it was largely a net neutral for Akihiro Sahara. So what you're missing out of this incarnation is just the rocket pack career change of somebody like Shun Skywalker and what he experienced. But based on what we have now, with no aftermath of the fallout, simply just existing in the timeline of seeing this unit come and then seeing this unit go, I think it's a successful project. I'm very happy with the time we spent with Mochizuki Dojo, and I'm also very glad that it's going away when it is.
Yeah, they didn't. If this unit would have existed into 2026, it would have been really prohibitive towards the growth of the three young guys. Like 8 months, like you're in, you're out. They didn't even have to order fresh Mochizuki Dojo t-shirts. They probably just wore through whatever extras they had left from the last time. Everyone came out of it, at least I feel like, on a little bit of a better trajectory, and it'll be interesting to see, at least now with like these now three complete like just new variables that are now going to insert themselves into the unit playing field. It's going to be really interesting to see that there. What did you think of the Royal Sambo on the Kobe Sambo Hall show?
I don't have many strong takeaways from it, which I think is saying something there. What did you think of it?
I have really liked these styles of Royal Sambos, and I thought that the way that they kind of dealt with Saipatra versus Gacha Dokuro, but then also weaving in Benkei versus Kakuta was really, I thought that that was really kind of well done, and you kind of have like the kind of like positioning for it. I thought Kato looked great in it, and the way that like Ben and Shun almost got on the same page, but that led to Shun's elimination, and then Ben finally kind of gets the direct fall on Kakuta, being able to dodge the hip attack. I thought that was great storytelling and getting us ready for like this being kind of the go home for the Dreamgate match.
Yeah, I'm very into this Dreamgate match. I like every step they've taken along the way.
Yeah, it just was. I thought for like the format, you got to have a lot of Kazuma Kimura. He started out the match, and like the way that the match changed, like tenor throughout it, when more people from other units kind of came in. I thought that for a formula that honestly, the Royal Sambos are really long in the tooth at this point, since bringing those back, I thought that this was at least an effective use of it with the people that were involved in.
I would agree with that.
And was there anything else you really wanted to touch on this the Sambo Hall show? There was a Kung Fu Masters versus Natural Vibes match that we
No. Watch the main event. You're good. Watch the main event. And if you're caught up on the happenings of Mochizuki Dojo, although I did really enjoy the tag match on this show with Daiki and Sahara against, was it Junior and Rita?
Right, yeah.
Junior and Rita. I thought that match was excellent. I really enjoyed that. Actually quite a bit. So I would watch that, and I would watch the main event, and then I would get ready for this Cork and Hall show we've got coming up next week.
Yep, that's right. And as we said earlier, expect our review of this later in the week. We're looking at a Friday record time, so expect it kind of over the weekend, but it is from Cork and Hall on Wednesday, the 8th. It is a 6:30 local time start. That's 5:30 East Coast, 9:30 Greenwich Mean Time. Going through the card, we open with Mochizuki Jr. and Akihiro Sahara versus Ryo Fuda and Daiki Yanagiuchi. We're going to see some fallout of Mochizuki Dojo, at least, kicking off the show. Then we get into an eight-man tag, Paradox, Yamato, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, and Haruki Doi versus Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, Takashi, and Punch Tomonaga. Expect that's kind of where Mochizuki is going to slot back into in the undercard now that the dojo's over. Match three, we have Natural Vibes versus D Courage, Yuki Yoshioka, Dragon Dai, and Ryoya Tanaka versus Strong Machine J, KZ, and UT. Match four, the original Jimmy, Suzumi Yokosuka, and Kakatora versus Menno Lee, Kota Minora, and Jason Lee of Gaja Dokoro. Our special six-man tag match, it has been announced that the Panther Brothers, Fight Panther Jr. and Aero Panther, will be on tour for Dragon Gate at least through October after their real show-stealing performance in Vegas. They'll be teaming with Luis Monte versus Hio, Jackie Kamei, and Rita. That's right. We're adding the Panther Brothers to this formula here, Case. And then the semi-main and the main event we've talked about before, they open the Triangle Gate title matches, is Kai, Ishin, and Yoshiki Kato of Gaja Dokoro versus Shun Skywalker, Hamare, and Kazuma Kimura. And then our main event, they open the Dream Gate title, Madoka Kakuta versus Benkei. So the Panther Brothers are flying in and they're getting tossed into a Mexico versus Japan trios match. And I feel like that's exactly what I would do with these guys.
It's a winning formula. I thought it was funny on the Miyane show, Jay made the note. He goes, well, it's been almost a year since Big Hug just disbanded. So Monte has been without a unit for a year. It's like, well, I guess that's right. But he has sort of been representing all of Mexico on his back for the entire summer. So I had it put together that he was still unaffiliated until Jay pointed that out. For the Panther Brothers, the two things to note here is, one, they trained in the Dragon Gate Dojo last year. They just never made an official debut, but they spent time in Japan in Kobe last year. So they are to some degree familiar with the house style and the pacing already, which is great. The other thing of note, they obviously had the breakout match in Vegas. The other match they had, and I will make sure that we have this linked in the show description for this episode, is they had a match in DTU 2 years ago that we all thought was the final match that Kento and Takuma were going to have in Mexico. It was my introduction to them. It was Kento and Takuma at the time as DTU Tag Team Champions. And we all came away from that match going, oh my God, Dragon Gate has to book these guys. And that was, again, that was the first time that I had seen them, or at least working with Kento and Takuma maybe slightly prior was the first time that I had seen them. But that match is on YouTube. I'll make sure it's linked in the description for this episode. But these guys can hang. I am incredibly excited. If I was going to pick two guys to come to Dragon Gate that had never been before, it would probably be these two guys. And we can only hope that they hit the ground running, that they have a huge debut in Cork, and I think they can. I am very, very excited for them.
Yeah, and it's an interesting month for them because they might get in for the Edeon doubleheader at the end of October into November, too. So there's a lot of chances for them to have a lot of opportunities to break out over the store. There's a lot of TV coming up over October.
So, feel like just knowing the way that Dragon Gate does business, I guess I would assume that they're in town through the final December Cork. And that is what I would think. I feel like a 3-month trip would be what Dragon Gate would normally do, but we'll have to see. I know nothing. I haven't talked to anybody. I haven't had the chance to reach out yet.
Yeah, that's how it normally would be for that kind of thing. But yeah, no, this show on Wednesday, basically everything on paper, aside from the Paradox versus Veterans match, has something that I'm really interested in, and I'll look forward to talk with you next week about it.
I couldn't agree more. I think this has the potential to be the Dragon Gate show of the year. I mean, Junior Sahara, Fuda, Yanagiuchi in the opener, that looks spectacular. Don't sleep on the Vibes, D Courage, six man. That could very easily be setting up a KZ versus Tanaka Brave Gate match. That would not surprise me at all. We'll see how much time and how much effort Susumu, Kagatora, Mino, and Jason Lee put in, but that match could be a ton of fun. And then those last three matches. I mean, there's a chance we're going notebook, notebook, notebook to close the show, and I think those are reasonable expectations.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that, and we'll be back with you next week to talk about that. But before that, it's time for us to get back to Michinoku Pro, and we'll be back next time closing out 1994. Case, anything else you wanted to touch on for out?
A pleasure to be back, Mike Spears. I missed you last week, and I'm glad that we're back doing two episodes next week.
Yeah, I missed you too, and I'm really excited for the shows we have coming up for everyone else. So you could follow us on social media, cases at underscoring your case on Twitter. I'm at Fujiheya. Open the voice gates on social media at Open Voice Gate, both on Twitter and Blue Sky. The best place to catch up with the show and to join the conversation is the Voices of Wrestling Discord. There's a great Dragon Gate channel where everyone is live tweeting along with the shows, with matches of the week, a lot of other deeper discussions, getting in on Brother Yoshi's 25th anniversary coming up next month, guys. That's been the topic of today.
Get into it, baby.
Yeah, I mean, KBS Hall, you're getting a three-way match of Toru Iwashi, Sachi Hokoboy, and Ken Oka, and that's not to mention a battle royal that has basically all the seedy side of the Japanese indie showing up in. You're getting both bodyguards.
At the Brother Yoshi celebration event? No way.
Oh, yeah. There are names on this that I am even not familiar with. This Masamune is coming out of nowhere to do this match, man. I'm God stoked bless. About the Brother Yoshi 25th anniversary. It's coming up only in a few weeks, guys. I might have to see how to get a DVD.
I was going to say, I feel like we have a friend that is A, probably going to be at that show, and B, would probably ship you all the merch you wanted.
As I look at my secret-based towel, yes, you're right.
I look at my Toru Iwashi anniversary program from last year, yeah, I think we might know a guy.
But all that kind of stuff's going on in the Dragon Gate channel. The Open the Voice Gate channel is where we post our show posts, also has our match listings for all of our historic programming, including a pin post with all of our evergreen historical content, including our 50 episode plus Dragon Gate USA series, as well as other historical shows in Dragon System history. That's on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But Case, I can hear my voice starting to go, so I think we're going to call that for tonight. We'll be back with you next week with Those Days and Dragon Gate from Cork and Hall. Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.